Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. I'm so psyched to be here for this part two of the Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival series of in-person interviews that I conducted at Bumbershoot over Labor Day weekend, September 2nd and 3rd. Of course, Bumbershoot takes place in Seattle in the shadow of the Space Needle at the Seattle Center. Just a wonderful festival. I had an amazing time there. Great food, great music, great people, fun atmosphere, easy to move around. It's just an ideal festival that I suggest anybody who is interested should really go next year and check this festival out. Was so happy to be there and present these in-person interviews that I conducted while there. And this is part two, which features interviews I did with the amazing Valerie June, with Courtney Taylor and Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols, with Canadian artist Debbie Friday and Evan Smith of Seattle band The Dip. I'm so happy to have you all along for this episode. There's a number of different ways that you can get involved in the Roadcase community. Really quick and easy way to get involved is to follow us on the socials. You can find out a bunch of information about the show there. We are at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Another great way to find out even more information about Roadcase is to visit our website, www.roadcasepod.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at info@roadcasepod.com. I'd love to hear from you. Another great way to help support Roadcase, and super easy to do and really helps out the show, is to follow Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. If you're on Spotify, there's a box right there on the Spotify homepage on Spotify, and it says follow, just as easy as that. You just click on that one. On Apple Podcasts, there's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. Click on that to subscribe to Roadcase. Great way to help support Roadcase is to rate and review Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. If you're on Spotify, under that follow box, there's a box with some stars. It's as easy as clicking on that. On Apple Podcasts, just scroll up a bunch from the Roadcase homepage. You'll see some stars and a place to write a review. You know what to do. So first up is the amazing Valerie June. I just had a wonderful conversation with her. She loves to laugh, super adorable. We had just a really fun conversation. Valerie June is a Grammy-nominated artist. She's a musician, singer, songwriter, poet, illustrator, actor, certified yoga and mindfulness and meditation instructor, and an author. What is it that she doesn't do? She's just absolutely so incredibly impressive. She also works with students for the President's Committee for the Arts and Humanities and continues to serve on that committee through the Kennedy Center. She is just so incredibly impressive. She has her most recent album is entitled The Moon and Stars, Prescriptions for Dreamers, that came out in 2022, along with a cover album that year entitled Undercover. Just some amazing cover versions of Gillian Welch, Mazzy Star, Bob Dylan, among others. Just really, really stunning. In the category of author, she is an Amazon number one bestseller in poetry for her first book, Maps for the Modern World. And just today, she is releasing a new book entitled Light Beams, a workbook for being your badass self. She's just absolutely amazing and really fun to talk to. And I know you're going to really love this interview. She's also on tour. You can check out more information about her tour dates from her website. She'll be out on the West Coast and then touring the rest of the country in October and November. Thanks so much to all of you for being here for this part two of my Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival series of in-person interviews. I'll be back after Valerie June to talk a little more about Valerie and then to introduce the next guest, the Dandy Warhols. But first, here's Valerie June.
Tennessee twine thing.
It's a Tennessee. We're going to do Tennessee things here, Valerie June. So great to see you.
You too.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
I'm really honored that you're here. I'm just so enamored with what you do and your music and just the whole thing. It's like so amazing. We're going to talk about
it. Okay, let's get it done. Let's do it.
Let's get her done. So Tennessee, small town.
Yeah.
Super small town?
Well, 8,000 people.
I grew up in LA. I lived in New York, and now I live in Chicago. I've never even, like, I couldn't do a small town.
Yeah.
How do you feel about big towns?
I like big towns, too. I split my time between New York and Tennessee.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
So I have City. A cosmopolitan life and a rural life. And
So I could do that. Yeah. Like having a vacation home.
Yeah, it is. But my vacation home is the road, man.
Yeah.
I've been all over the world on vacation.
Well, vacation home, I mean like a second place to go where you can kind of chill.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way over time, you know. I need it. I need to be able to cut off the world and retreat.
Yeah, regroup and recalibrate. Is that important to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And listen to the cicadas and the bullfrogs and... The morning birds and the evening birds. You can hear the birds on my last record. I put them on the very last song.
I want to hear bullfrogs on there. I want to hear bullfrogs.
I think there might be one in
leave it there. I won't do
in that. In the last little second of the music of the bird song.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so southern to me. It's like a bullfrog sound.
Wow.
Because cicadas you hear in like the suburbs of anywhere now.
Yeah,
there
that's
was like,
true.
Like the suburb, northern suburbs of Chicago were overrun by cicadas at some point, like a couple of years ago.
I just don't think that like the birds in San Diego, for example, they sound different than the birds in Tennessee. And the birds in Tennessee sound different than the birds in New York. But they are
different
the
families.
Same. You know, they'll be the same type of bird, but the accent's different to my ear. So it's just like our speaking voices are different. Bird song's different. And cicadas are probably different, too, but I haven't paid attention to them as much.
Well, it makes sense, right? Are you a birder person?
I will be by the time I'm 80 or 90, I'll be sitting around like watching them, taking pictures of them with the binoculars.
Sitting on your rocker on the porch.
Yeah, I'm a bird song person. So yeah. I'm learning to be able to identify the birds by the song, you know, when I hear it. Then I'm like,
that's cool.
Yeah. So that's the first step. The next step is visually identifying them. I'm a plant person. I'm a crazy plant lady. I have a lot of plants.
You said it, not me, Valerie.
Constantly want to know what they are. Yeah.
Plants are, I mean, it's living things and growth. And you talk so much about the human condition.
Do I?
I don't think that's a reach to like just go broad. I'll just big picture it for a second.
Okay.
And so it just kind of makes sense that you're like looking at birds and analyzing and like looking at how things communicate. And what I really love about what you do is that you talk about how that you believe like each person has this level of creativity within them and you can achieve that. How can people achieve that?
Oh, how can people achieve it?
Is it a goal, or is it something that you have to want?
I think it's something you have to allow. I think we all, every day, we're creating from what you want to eat that day, what you want to wear. I mean, we do it in all kinds of ways. I love to do it in clothes and in fashion, but I also love doing it in music and poetry and plants and art. So we are creators. It's just being conscious of what that creative side. And even if you're a lawyer, you're a doctor or something that's considered not necessarily an artistic creative path, recognizing your strength as a creator and understanding the underlying principles and laws that make that work, and how that can be applied to connecting with other humans and creating and cultivating kindness, creating beauty, creating love, creating peace. You know, that's kind of my thing when I say that, is like the ultimate creative things are virtues and heart, you know? So all the other stuff is just practice for getting down to the root of those things, you know?
Right. So it's kind of what you're saying is it's what's inside of everybody, and creativity doesn't necessarily mean to be artistic, but it's what I hear you saying is kind of like, it's a passion. It's what makes individuals human, individualism and sort of passion, and then the drive to want to be your own best self, really, because if you put out, if you have a passion and you want to achieve that, so many people don't, is my sense. There are so many people that are not happy and maybe depressed, or know that, for example, for me, and I told you, I talked about this with Dan. Well, this is, I talked about Danielle with Danielle to ponder a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that before we got on the air. You don't feel near necessary. One maybe not does not necessarily feel their whole until they achieve what they want to achieve. And there are a lot of people that perhaps don't. So I think it's wonderful that you're out there talking about this and helping people. You've written books about it. You've written just to inspire people and let people know that there always is something within you.
Yeah. And, you know, when you say a lot of people don't, I think that most of us don't. You know, because that thing that we're wishing to bring into reality, it is ever moving. It's ever unfolding. Like when you look at a lotus flower and the petals yeah. just keep opening and opening. I mean, like you don't ever get there. So that's why the space within is so important, because it allows you to find a centered spot to be able to allow all the rest of the shit to fly while you just stay in the nucleus in the eye of the hurricane.
Yeah, yeah. Just to get things out there, to put things out, to yeah. be yourself is what you're saying.
Right. And to be comfortable in that space and welcome beauty and love and not feel that I got to be depressed about what I haven't achieved or where I haven't gotten to. Because then you project that out into the world and that becomes something that, right. you know.
Only do what you can do with what you can at the moment, and just kind of know that, and that know that you're doing your, that one, that a person is trying, is that you're generally doing your best.
Yeah. And right. it takes That's lifetimes hard. For hard a lot to of things achieve. To manifest. So
yeah, that too. It's hard to get to that point when you feel comfortable to put your own passions out there.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Not
about
for
that.
You. I mean, I'm just sort of reflecting on what I, you know, I talk to people about that all the time, and I talk to, and you see it when you just talk to humans that are in the world.
Okay. So you're talking about on different scales, though. You're talking about the world scale. And so when you break it down into the scales of the day, and breath work can help you do that, just this breath and that breath.
Yeah.
Or, okay, what am I creating today in the kitchen, or in, you know, in the way I'm folding my clothes, or in the way I'm taking care of my body, brushing my teeth, doing my hair, choosing the clothes that I'm wearing. Like all of it is.
That's
you.
All an expression of oneself.
Right.
That's mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And that's kind of like what gives you the courage and strength to put the passions out in the world, to me. Like, because when you are comfortable practicing in that way, then you start to want to share something that you cooked with a friend or with a loved one. Ooh, you got to try this. Man, this tastes good. Girl, you got to have some of this, right. you know? Yeah, so yeah. then you start sharing it with one person. They're like, man, you right. That tastes like good. Give me some more of that. And at the end of the day, you know, you just keep doing it, right. you know? And you keep sharing these things of beauty or hope or whatever, but you can also do it with things that are not on that side of the spectrum. So it's whatever you want to create, you create no matter what.
Right.
It's just, what do you want to create?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a choice. Like creativity can be anything is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's embodying that.
Yeah.
Like in your own self, and also kind of recognizing one's own accomplishments, and in you have to kind of pat yourself on the back when you do things like that.
Well, my favorite part of it is when I'm not doing anything but watching the creativity of the earth, like with trees and nature, like right. we started the conversation with. Man, I mean, sometimes I'm just like, whoa, I cannot believe that this flower just did that. Or that bird just did that, or, you know.
Right.
So the wonder of what isn't man-made. We're talking about the man-made, but then there's the other side, which is very fascinating.
Nature.
That alone is a reason to be on Earth and enjoying your existence here. You know?
Are you kind of a nature person as well?
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like being in nature and try to find it wherever I go. You know, I try to go to parks or botanic gardens. Or
speaking of nature, where do you hang out in New York City?
Well, I know nurseries, so I go to nurseries.
Oh, interesting. Where are those? We're talking Manhattan?
There's a couple in Manhattan, but I know the ones in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are parks. And, you know, when you're walking down the street, if you walk in the same neighborhood, then you start to learn trees and you learn what blooms of what season. Like begonias do very well in the summer in New York.
Okay.
And I used to see begonias and I'd be like, ooh, okay, that's a nice flower. Woo woo. But now I'm like, dang, a begonia will take over a whole, you know, a whole spread or a whole corner of a sidewalk, you know,
right.
With green space if you give it the space to do it.
Yeah.
And so like just watching plants and falling in love with them.
That's so
really cool.
I so totally didn't come into this conversation thinking we were going to talk about plants and nature and things. Like that was just because like you're also just your musical creativity is incredible. You've just put out this new covers album and I was kind of blown away by that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And not only the song choices are incredible. You got Nick Cave, Bob Dylan, Gillian Welch. Gillian or Jillian?
I think Gillian, both? But you know, I met her a couple of times. I probably should have asked.
Massey Starr as well.
Yeah.
Is it just kind of one of those fun albums that you just like, I want to do people's songs?
Yeah.
Because I love these songs.
Well, because I love the songs. That's yeah. what led me to do it.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't cover songs that you dislike.
Yeah.
And that's the second album from last year. Also, you had Moon and Stars as well. And you're an author.
Yes.
As well. I mean, I'm skipping all this. I skipped over all this stuff because we just got in this, you know, just went right down into it. But, I do want to talk about the albums or the book. So Maps for the Modern World.
Yeah. I love the fact that I got courage to put that passion out in the world. Shel Silverstein and Rupi Kaur, they're both like inspiration for me because yeah. they write poems, but also draw.
Also nature.
And so I put
Shel Silverstein is synonymous with tree now.
The Giving Tree?
Yeah.
That's the best book on the earth, like ever.
Isn't it?
I love that book.
Do you think it's sad or happy? It's sad, right?
It's sad.
Okay, because I felt I was going to just go right with sad, but then I sort of gave you the opportunity. Because I think it was, I read that to my kids a million times. I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to read this again. It's like making me sad.
It's sad, but it's like an old Appalachian song.
Yeah.
Or a blues song.
Yeah.
That sadness is so zen to me.
Right, right. Because it's life. You just have to deal with it. That's what happens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You just get cut down to a stump and then someone's just sitting on you at the end of the day.
It's true. That,
right? Children's book, Somebody to Love, last year. That's amazing.
Wow.
I didn't even know Jack White. It's on Third Man Books. I didn't even know there was a Third Man Books.
Yeah, Jack.
That's so cool.
So many artists put books out.
So that's a story about the banjo, your little banjo lele, which is a combo of like a banjo and it's like a ukulele-sized banjo.
Oh, yeah.
Thing, right?
It's the cutest little instrument.
And it's a story. Tell me a little bit about the story.
Well, the banjo lele has a dream. And it wants to share its passion with the world.
Uh-huh.
But everywhere it turns, it faces challenges. And it has to come up with the courage to still believe. And so by the end of the story, it's similar to the Velveteen Rabbit where it comes to life. Uh-huh. And you know, all in all, the end is happy. But it does go through some challenges. And sometimes when I'm reading it to, like, I've read it to over 1,000 kids now. And when I read it, sometimes I'm like, is this dark or what?
You're scaring the kids. Like, why do the kids look so terrified?
I don't know.
How do you do the readings to kids? Are you brought go into schools, or you go to like you come to a theater and they like bring them as a field? How does that work?
Well, at the Grammy Museum, they bust in about 300 students. But then I did at the National African American Museum, and families came, and then I do schools, and in the school they're already in school, so they're happy to get out and have like a little program for 30 minutes. It's
we
gotta
go
great.
Listen to this crazy lady talk about her book, her banjo.
Talk about dreams and instruments and the artist, the illustrator, Marcela Avalar, comes with me, so we talk about art.
And that led to your inclusion on the President's Committee for Arts and Humanities?
Yes, through the Kennedy Center. Uh-huh. It's a program where you go into schools, different people from actresses to writers to musicians go into schools and share their craft with kids just to inspire them.
Well, you were doing that with this book, so am I mixing up the timing?
You
were already on the committee, and then this book enabled you to go do this, supported by Lincoln Center.
Kennedy Center.
Kennedy Center, sorry.
And yes.
Wrong president.
I did the event at the Kennedy Center. It was so beautiful. Oh my God, it was beautiful. But yes, that's the different timing. So I was doing the things with Turnaround Arts, which is a program that Michelle Obama started when she was in the White House. And I was going around telling the story of the baby banjolele and playing Somebody to Love. And the way the students' eyes would light up, that's what inspired me to write the actual kids' book. So it took me 3 years after being in that program to write it, to get it illustrated, and to shop it to publishers. And that's when Jack White's Third Man Books came in. Yeah. And they were like, yay, we want it. And we were like, okay, cool, because we wanted a vinyl record in the back. So
we did that.
Yeah.
Oh, which songs did you include?
Copies had Somebody to Love on one side and Crawdad's song, You Get a Line and I'll Get a Pole, Honey, on the other side.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's a nice old kid song.
You
know?
Wait, you said only 500 of the copies of the book had a 45.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was always like something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
No, so to actually get the chance to do it.
Yeah. I love books with albums in them. It's like mixing of both worlds.
Yeah. I think adults love it the most.
That's what happens with the good children's books.
Yeah.
Well, because, they have to be relatable. They have to be on, like, they're talking about real life problems, just maybe with, right?
That's why I like I collect them. That's why I have so many. And I don't have kids. I just have the books.
Yeah. One of the things I miss about my kids are not little anymore was, like, reading them amazing books.
You might have to go spend some time at the public library sharing your love for reading kids' books with the kids in the neighborhood.
I might just have to bug my 26-year-old daughter to get married and have a kid at some point, but not too soon.
Oh, don't you do it. Let her have her time.
I'm not that kind of guy.
What?
I've never had an opportunity to say that. I wouldn't mind, though.
What are they going to call you?
Papa.
Oh, I like that.
That's just what I called my grandfather.
Yeah. I call mine Granddad.
Yeah, I like that.
Grand and Granddad.
Yeah.
They were special.
In the South, they have good names for the elder generations.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just
Meemaw,
feels...
Nana, stuff like that.
Meemaw is kind of funny.
My mother
but like
is granny.
Granddad. Maybe it just sounds good with the accent.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Granddad.
And so before I get the hook here, we got to, because this is going to be a short one, but the new book coming out.
Well, it's called...
In a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's called in a few days, in September 19th.
Light Beams, a workbook for being your badass self.
Oh, yeah.
So, workbook. So, what does this look like?
Well, it's funny because...
Do I have to fill out exercises and like turn them into the teacher? They're in the back.
Exactly. You have to do it. You basically fill out the book yourself. It's a guided journal. There are prompts and exercises, things like go hug a tree in your neighborhood.
Really?
Like,
oh my God.
Pretty much bunch of crazy plant lady prompts. And then a lot of hippie shit. That's but awesome. Really, like, you know, when it comes down to it, I'm a big time yogi and I'm into like traveling and seeing the world and just how, you know, some of the the sweet things that come from living a yogi life. They are sometimes like, if you can't apply it to your life and to other people and bringing each other together and mm-hmm. connecting with other humans in a heart space, then it can be frou-frou. So the book is making all of those kind of things that we see in the world and that we're open to if we're on a yogi path.
Yeah.
It's practicing them in your everyday. When you're in traffic and you want to cuss out people, get the hell out of my way. Beep, beep, beep.
You know me better than I thought.
How do you zen then, you know?
Oh my God, I just don't. I just get to where I'm going.
See, that's what I'm saying, though.
I mean, let's not talk about driving. I live in Chicago. It's bonkers. Are you a yoga practitioner?
Yeah.
Oh, so am I, big time.
Yeah.
I love it.
Totally.
It's kind of like changed my life.
Pretty much almost every day for the last 30 years.
Really? I suck at getting on my mat when I'm on my own, though.
Oh.
I'll just do a little bit.
Well,
I do a little bit every day, but it's but I love going to the studio, and you got to do it on your own too. So yeah, I'm a big proponent of it. I mean, wow,
I like
it extends your life 100%.
It does,
or just make what life you have just that much better.
Well, I can feel the oxygen, like when I get off a plane, I'm running low. But then if I go do my practice, I can send the breath all the way down to the tippy, tippy toes. And I'm like, okay, I cleared out some energy. I'm moving. I'm feeling better. I'm not jet lagged because I basically live in motion. So I have to do it for balance of my physical self and my mental self too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. People don't realize how much it's a breath-oriented movement. Like, I think yoga is thought about it just doing the poses, but it's really about centering yourself with your own breath. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm just kind of saying it out loud.
Yeah, and then it means union. So and when you think about that, the word yoga meaning union, then you have to think about, like, what uniting with what? And I think the uniting with the higher self, with all that is, but also all living beings, each other, that we're one. And in a time when things are so divisive, it's very important for us to be able to look at another person and see a mirror, you know? So that's what the book is dealing with. Your badass self is not just you out there being a baller and and stacking and doing great. Is what? How does that relate to the community? How does it relate to plants and the planet? How does it relate to all, you know?
Yeah, I get that. Because if you kind of center yourself and focus on what that central energy is that you can feel and you can tap into, not only are you more calm on yourself so that you can deal with the world in a more peaceful manner, but I think you gain an understanding or more accepting of the crazy fucking shit that happens in the world.
Right. And when it's time for you not to be calm, you're ready.
True. Good point.
You're able to navigate that with some Jedi ninja magic.
Right. You know? So you go back to your like humble little place in Tennessee and like chill out, mellow. And then you go to New York and get just fucking angry. And then you just go back to Tennessee.
Neutralize, you know?
Right.
I got to stay nice and amethyst crystal balanced.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's the zen of just, can I go back to the city and just like stay calm?
Pretty much.
Well, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with me, Valerie. It's such a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm a big admirer of your work and what you talk about.
Thank you.
In both your music and your written word.
Oh, I appreciate that. We'll have to do a practice together one day.
I would love to. That would be an honor. That would be so much fun.
Yeah.
What style?
Well, I basically just do them all. I love vinyasa because I like the high energy of it, but
yeah.
It depends on where I am that day, but vinyasa is my number two.
Well, so it's like Ashtanga based.
Yeah.
Have you done like the straight up Ashtanga series?
I haven't. No.
That's that's intense.
Really?
Well, yeah, because you just kind of like do. You know what's fun about Ashtanga is that you should try it because instead of like going to different teachers, if you're going to a studio and you're kind of mixing it up, right? Because you've got all the, now we're getting going in deep on it, because you got all the poses in your head. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do a little bit of this, a little bit of this. And it doesn't really matter because you're just kind of flowing. And then you sort of just do what feels good to you. Ashtanga, you're doing the same thing every single time. And it's a really good way to see where you are because you remember. I feel like for me, I remember each pose a little bit better and where I'm at with that pose because it's always done in the same order.
Oh, that's
cool.
So
it gives you a really good kind of baseline, like where am I at today?
Okay. Well, maybe that's what we should do together.
All right.
when we do our practice together. Okay. You lead me. I'm willing to follow.
All right, cool.
I love it.
I will. Yeah. I will. Okay. Well, thanks for being here. Good luck on the set today.
Oh, thank you. Come to the show. I will. Don't just
absolutely.
Rush out of here.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Noah.
Bye.
Okay, that was me talking to the wonderful Valerie June. I just love chatting with her. She really just lifts you up and makes you feel better somehow. She's just got this amazing light and wonderfully empowering energy. I just really love it. Today marks the release of her Light Beams, a workbook for being your badass self. It's an interactive workbook that builds on themes of mindfulness, harmony, and healing, and really is such an example of what she talks about in terms of creativity and allowing one to express one's creativity by being oneself. We talked about that quite a bit. Her children's books are wonderful. She produced the story of Valerie June's Sweet Little Baby Banjo Lele, and that's published by Jack White's Third Man Books. And if when you go to see her show, she'll play the banjo lately and talk about that a little bit. And I remember as a kid, musicians coming in when I was like in second grade, and that really had a massive effect on me. She's just so impressive. I look forward to having Valerie June on the show, hopefully again in the near future for a longer conversation. And you can see her out on tour. She's currently in California at the end of September, and then she works her way back across the country. And you can find out more information about Valerie June's tour dates by visiting her website. Thanks again to Valerie for being here on Roadcase. Next up is Courtney Taylor and Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols. They're originally from Portland, Oregon, and the Dandy Warhols are just this eclectic combination of psych rock, shoegaze, power pop, synth pop, and all sorts of different genres. Just an amazing band. They've been around for over 25 years. Their catalog is vast. I came into this not really knowing too much about them, but I really utterly love their music. They were signed in the mid-90s originally to Capitol Records. In 2000 with their third album, the single off that album, Bohemian Like You, peaked at number 28 on Billboard's Alternative Songs chart in the U.S. and reached number 5 on the U.K. singles chart in 2001. And their accolades over the course of their career continue to go on. In 2012, their 8th album, This Machine, hit number 88 on the Billboard 200 albums chart, which was a career high at the time for the band. And their most recent effort in 2020, Tafel Music Means More When You're Alone, is an amazing 3.5 hour instrumental exploration of sound and just sonic power. These guys are just really, really amazing. We talked a lot about creativity, what drives them, what their artistry is, and just got into conversation that went down a lot of different avenues and a number of different tangents. And if you're a Dandy Warhols fan, or even if you're not, you'll learn a lot about what is it that makes up the Dandy Warhols, and what is it like to be in this world for over 25 years, and what is it that continues to drive them from a creative perspective and continue to gain fans around the world. They're very quirky duo, the two of these guys. And at times I didn't know if they were joking sometimes. I wasn't really quite sure, but they're just quirky, like I said, in just kind of in a very endearing way. And I really loved that. You know, I can go in a lot of different directions constantly. That's sort of what I do here. And I just found it very endearing. And maybe that's just because I liked them a lot and just found their way of speaking and way of engaging just super interesting and compelling. And I know that you will, too. I want to thank again Courtney and Pete for taking the time to sit down with me at Bumbershoot. I'll be back after this interview to talk a little bit more about Courtney and Pete and the Dandy Warhols, and then to introduce the next guest, Debbie Friday. And here is the Dandy Warhols.
Courtney, Dandy Warhols. So amazing. But you've been around for like so long.
Decades,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm still older than you guys, so I feel old too.
You actually feel old?
No, I just say that because I know. Are you kidding me? I do not feel
old.
It's
so weird.
Age is an interesting thing.
I think I felt...
How old are y'all?
I felt creakier when I was 28.
Not my head.
Yeah.
I don't feel old in my head.
Or my body. I don't.
Oh, some mornings.
Oh, I forgot about mornings. That's why I try not to see them.
I've
never tried to see mornings. There's never been a part of my life where I've tried to see mornings.
What do you mean by tried to see mornings?
Like, I'm just going to get up every day at 7.
Hot damn it. I'm going to attack the day and it's going to be...
You're gonna,
oh, you know, like Jerry Maguire movie where they just clap
the shit out of that diem.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you did a bunch of movie reviews, the one sentence movie reviews. Mm-hmm, is that you?
Mm-hmm.
So did you... Yeah. I couldn't scroll far enough, but did you get to Jerry Maguire?
Oh. I don't know.
They're brilliant review. Who doesn't want to read a one sentence movie review? God,
no kidding, right?
Pete, why so you much laughing? Easier.
But you really have to think about them, you know, because you have to make a number of things clear.
Absolutely.
You have to, whether you even like it or not, is sometimes more obscure than you think it is. And when you're doing a one sentence review, but you can have run-on sentences. I made that rule up myself.
No, but I did read there was a super long sentence, and I'm like, oh, I was just uber impressed with the structure of this sentence. It is one sentence, and it's not run-on. So you did a good job with that.
Thanks, man.
If I may.
Yeah. But you have to actually imply or blatantly say why. What is it that really blows about this? Or why does it almost blow but doesn't? You know,
yeah.
And that's, like, you could say that. Almost blows but doesn't. You know, and that's sometimes you have to leave it at that. But I like to say why. One of my favorite ones was I was looking at this movie going, God, I wish I had some knobs and dials to darken it up and get the look right, you know, because I'm just looking at him. I'm watching him act, enter scene, roll camera. I'm watching him write the damn thing. It's so blatant that it's just people talking and reciting, you know. So right. I think it was if I wanted to watch these people write,
just
direct,
wind them up.
Light, and act this movie out,
yeah,
I would have gotten myself invited to the set. And I thought that's great because it tells you that it sucks. It's almost pretty much unwatchable because it's just visually too blatant and obvious and there's no shadow or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Are you a film? Have you done film? Videos?
Well,
do y'all do videos?
I kind of micro.
Do you all do videos?
You mean make
like
make
music videos?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we've made all of them.
12D?
Yeah, a ton. And I edited and I basically more or less direct or control freak all of them.
I'm laughing because I'm watching Pete laugh.
I would edit
every single time.
I would have to edit them. So. My head is probably almost as into film as it is music, you know?
Yeah. It's an art form. Clearly that you think a lot about.
You took film at NYU, right?
Not film. No, I transferred to NYU thinking I would go into film. Okay. And then I took a film class before I went, actually got to NYU and hated the fact that I had to work with other people.
It's like
if I wasn't going
to
be the director
painting.
Right off from the stop, then you know the start, like, forget it.
Trying to get back to painting, back to your graffiti art.
So I did some video art.
Yeah, when I first showed up in New York, he was working on video feedback stuff, which we should still try to find or recreate and use for a.
But
if you hate working with other people, that's an interesting thing for someone to say that's in a band. Because you
for 30
kind of
years.
Really are. Yeah. Yeah.
That was
two bands.
Because when you said that, I was thinking, like, what art form can you be in where you're not doing it?
I know,
you can be a writer.
I know. It was something that music was something I didn't think I could do, I think, in the beginning. And I just wanted to do it. And so I just, like, this was kind of my in.
Yeah.
And then once I was in, I was like, oh, okay.
Well, it was easy at first also for you with us, because it was just me and you in that apartment.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Yeah. So and, it was easy, and he was the one who made me do it. I mean, I would never have followed through without him. He's just like a persistent, persistent yeah. of like,
wait, teach me how to do that.
Yeah.
I go, well, this, you know, why don't we just make a band? You know, let's just do it.
Right.
Like, okay.
Cool. So I'm kind of not believing you that you said you didn't want to, you don't like working with other people. It sounds like you're a really good wrangler of humans.
I do like working with other people. It's just that my first experience with film was, it was weird. There was like this, it was a big class. And so we got split into two halves to do one short film. And so I was the art director on the second half. So all the work was done. All I was doing was continuity, and it was just no fun. So I just didn't want to do that.
Interesting. When were you in NYU?
Early 90s.
Yeah. Thank you. Early 90s.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was there for grad school, about the same time.
Okay.
Started out in 88.
Okay. At NYU.
Like, yeah. I was in political science.
Okay.
At the time. I had this notion that I could like actually that it was just interesting to me. I traveled abroad, and it was sort of my way to kind of express that interest in international stuff. But it didn't really.
Yeah. What good, in good place the to hell?
I got to work at the UN for a little while.
Wow.
Yeah, what did you learn?
That it's really hard to get a job in doing what you love if your interest is in international politics
and what you,
among other things. What did I love about it?
Yeah.
At the time, you know, I thought it was just so like, there's just the interplay of nations and what that means and cultures on an international level and how,
Well, did you ever major in psychology?
No,
because there's the way it always looked to me was there's three levels. There is psychology, the study of the individual.
Yeah.
Then there's sociology, the study of groups of individuals. Then there's poli-sci, which is one level more expanded or abstract.
Well, it's how those groups interact with one another.
Yeah, it grabs
on a larger scale.
There you go.
Right, and what those rules are and how to.
Yeah, I never.
But I looked at it more from the reason why I kind of went away from it is because I was less of a scientist. I guess I was more of a sociologist, but I didn't realize it at the time. So you can approach politics from a sociological standpoint. Just how different international, how different groups around the world behave when they have to interact with one another.
Don't you have to approach poli-sci with constantly referencing both
absolutely
individual psychology?
Well, that's how the best people do it, but that's not always how it's done as an academic discipline. And I guess now I'm figuring out that that's why I didn't really. I finished my degree and everything, but I was more about people.
Wouldn't that be just which professor you have?
It depends. Yeah. There's different ways of looking at it. You know, you read like Thomas Friedman, who talks really about what the essence is of the people and how people are interacting and what the other forces are in the world that creates
the
environments
That's the other thing, right? Is that like poli-sci then includes, the green theory of us destroying ourselves off this planet. I mean,
right. I mean, it continues to evolve with so many different types of, yeah.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. Things evolve as they age, like Dandy Warhol's, I dare say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How are you guys evolving? How's it feeling right now? Since you've been at this for so long. It's such an amazing music. It's so, wow. I mean, just the sonic palette is ever changing and intriguing. I guess
forward, just getting bored with. I mean, I was just talking with the guitar
player. Boredom is boredom is the only way forward. You're just going to leave that hanging out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the guitarist for Shannon and the Clams, who I haven't seen in 5 years.
Yeah,
you know?
They're great.
And I was like, God, you guys have really progressed and expanded your tentacles out into other genres of stuff, but it's all something centric, you know, it's all 50s or 60s centric.
Yeah.
And he's like, we just get bored. You know, we just got bored. So apparently.
So the combating boredom. Boredom. And create new words. So it keeps things interesting. So Pete, tell me.
Thank you, William Shakespeare. Thank you. You gave us boredment.
Boredment. Yeah.
Boredment.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that?
Where do you
I'm trying to involve
Where
you,
do you
Pete.
Stand on
oh, I this political. Is normal. It's, this is
he'll turn anything into a political debate.
Oh, let's go.
See, it, I,
have you conti-
I,
how have you continued to evolve it?
By new instruments.
Yeah,
and like, new sounds, new whatever, like whatever, a new pedal, new anything, like will help.
Because of boredom with the old sounds,
pretty much. Yeah.
See.
Right. What is the, what are you pointing at there? You created something. The Buchla, is that what that is?
Yeah, it's a little modular synthesizer thingy,
right?
That will create some interesting sounds, yeah. Possibly for the next record,
uh-huh.
Or yeah. The one after that.
Could be. I mean, how are you going to top the later around it?
Oh, I will.
when I walked into the Music Experience Center today for the first time, there was a piece of like classic rave music going, but it was, I think it was new though. It had it had more sonic power and richness than true old rave, I think, unless they're remastering and stuff. But it was awesome. You know what it reminded me of is You Spin Me, but when that became more,
yeah,
that kind of thing. And it was, God, it just made me go, I want to make a record. I want our next record to sound like this. Why don't we just do a whole record of that, you know?
We've got like 3-4 more ideas for what the next record should sound like.
Yeah.
So you're not quite there yet?
No, because we still haven't got the one we just did out.
I know. We're supposed to.
You haven't got... Oh, you got two. You got one in the can already.
We have one that's been done for a while.
A single in a week or something.
Yeah, there's a...
Working it to
is this latest single the one with Debbie Harry? Is that no. Is that like a one off kind of thing?
That was a little. Yeah. That's a remix of a song that will be on the next record. That will probably be a single.
Oh yeah, you don't. Get I mean, Debbie Harry and not release it. You know?
Yeah,
right.
but yeah, we're going to try before we hand the record to a label.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna try releasing a single on our label and, you know, just DIY do it, you know, as punk rock as we can, but without trying to miss the point altogether of wanting to get it out to people who want it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have some cool people and connections we've made over the years that are,
I imagine.
That are good at interfacing with the world.
Is that kind of a struggle to get things out there to feel like you're reaching the right people at this point?
We can reach our fans, no problem.
Yeah.
It's just reaching anybody beyond that. That's we're in the same position that every other band is in, you know, every new band is. Everybody that's been around as long as us, everybody.
Yeah.
Like it's really tricky to get like noticed in amongst all the other bands that are putting out songs. Well,
is that
like
frustrating for you?
Is covered in a thick
yes,
gray,
no.
Screaming into a thick gray waxy fog covering the globe, and you're supposed to scream into it and have it heard all over the earth.
Yeah.
You just have to put stuff out and do your best. And I was just saying to Zia, I'm just excited to try something that we haven't done. And I mean, it really doesn't matter if you succeed or fail or whatever that is, but to learn from it and go, whoa, we tried this, you know, and we could not control the outcome.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's pretty fun. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not risking we're not mortgaging our homes, you know, to put out a record.
Yeah.
We're just like, shit, let's throw, you know, we can afford this. You know, it might be just pissing into the ocean, but whatever.
Well, what does that balance look like for you wanting to expand a fan base, for lack of a better term, versus, you know, that you just want to create? It feels like you have that very much of that creative fire.
We made an incredible record.
Yeah.
And we want to get noticed. We want like beyond what
you want to expand.
Yeah. It's like, 'cause we're not done.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It's like, we're,
are people saying that you're done?
No. Okay. Uh-uh. Okay. I don't feel like
nobody's saying much of anything.
I think that's the problem.
I don't know your catalog intimately. I'm fucking into it. So count me in on the new wave, doing what I can do.
The new record just seems slightly more focused than the last few.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that can create?
Well, we made a rule. Yeah. Every song has to start with a metal riff, with a acid rock, classic acid rock metal.
Why
riff.
Is that?
So, well, it for just because something, it was
are you
felt
joking?
Cool.
You're joking. You're,
we're no, not joking.
Okay. Not okay. joking.
And it just they just it was so we want somebody to do. I guess that's what we do. We make a record we wish somebody else would make, so we have to do it for them. That's kind of what drives
that
us.
That sounds like your movie reviews.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's also, we're just filling a gap in something. There's always something missing.
In our hearts.
Souls?
In our souls. Even better.
That empty hole inside of y'all.
Well, that's that's a given. But there's also like a sonic sort of something that's missing that we're either interested in or somebody's not doing right.
I was talking to Jerry Douglas at Newport Folk a couple weeks ago, famous dobro player, 15-time Grammy winner. I'm like, so I forget what the question was, but he's saying, I'm still chasing the perfect tone that I'm looking for. I know what it is, but I haven't actually achieved it.
This is a guitar player?
Yeah, he's a dobro player. And so that's an interesting concept that I kind of think is analogous. There's always that level, you know, in mathematics when there's like the asymptote, there's that one level that you just, that it approaches infinitely, but never actually gets to.
Divided by zero?
Well, you can't divide by zero, but. No, it's an equation that it doesn't necessarily get to the axis, but always gets closer infinitely. Mm-hmm. So there's always a level that you want to achieve. There's almost a beauty in not being able to get to that exact level.
Yeah, I mean, because you're never done.
Right. No.
Until,
no way. Right. Yeah.
You just kind of need a nap.
And more naps as you get
more
older.
Naps.
Yeah, getting out of bed in the morning. Going back to that. Why is that just like, I don't want to sound like an old guy.
It's,
can you guys chime in here so I'm not the only
third
one?
Glass. It's the third glass. Two glasses of wine, you would be fine.
Oh, I was not talking about having drunken anything the night before. I'm like,
Why didn't you? What? I guess I don't understand.
Good question. I don't understand
those. Is that a real sentence?
Is what a real sentence?
The thing you just said about not drinking.
Okay. Is drinking a Dandy Warhol's ethos? Or is it Courtney?
I think Brent and I are just really expensive winos.
Yeah. You have a wine.
I have a wine bar. I own a wine bar, and I.
Where is that?
It's in Portland, and it's really great. It's really great. Mm. We very simple, just one of each of the five main wines there are. You know, white, rosé, red, and then white or rosé with bubbles, champagnes. You know, and that's it.
Sparkling wine
and one kind of plate of, you know, charcuterie and baguette to eat, and that's it. Nice. And then the music is perfect, the interior is perfect, the lighting is rad, and it's just a divey, cool place. You can get great wine and have a really kind of grunge atmosphere. And it's based on kind of the bars in Seattle in the late 80s and early 90s when we started coming up here a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it just had cool bars.
And what's
cool
it called?
Old bars that had cool music in an old man bar setting.
What's the bar called?
The Old Portland.
Nice. Yeah.
You know.
Pete, you have this new album with your solo project?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
It's a collection of songs that I put together and then got some friends to sing on, various different people.
Yeah.
It's the third one I've done.
Yeah.
Man.
So from your perspective, just doing a solo project, how does that feed you?
It's a way for me to explore different directions, like completely, and also I have to do pretty much all of it.
Yeah.
Like I still don't play drums and I definitely don't play piano well enough for some of the things I want. Mm-hmm. So I get some other people involved.
Right.
But yeah, it's like learn how to play bass, learn how to program a drum machine, learn how to do like, you know, modular synth nonsense and,
right.
you know, and create songs that way and textures and whatever.
Yeah.
And then also learn how to be a studio engineer,
so
producer, like the whole bit.
The ability just to do everything yourself.
Yeah. And just like without anybody else in the room. Uh-huh. You know, whatever that pressure is.
With not having Courtney talk at you the entire time.
Well, that works in like that. That works very well in another in the Dandy Warhols.
Yeah,
but I need to do other things so I can then bring something back into the band.
Oh, okay. So with each venture, you kind of learn something else.
And that's absolutely, part of your arsenal,
and you can bring that back.
You play with different people, and it's instantly you've got something new to bring back.
Pete and I haven't made a record together in 25 years, right? We haven't. Actually, more since Come Down. That was our last. We made the first two records together.
13 Tales, too.
That was just you're talking. You mean just the two of you?
Yeah. Oh, we were the band. You know, it was like we got Zia. She's rad. But she was just learning.
Right.
And then we had Hedford, and he was great. But Pete and I knew what we wanted, so it was me and Pete. And then it became me, Pete, and Brent. And then, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't like you and I in a bubble like this record was.
The new record was, it was a kind of a pandemic thing. So,
it was amazing. I couldn't believe the skills you've developed. Just unbelievable. And still with the same taste that we've had since the beginning. It was awesome, man. And just, you know, and he and Zia both kind of poo-pooed the idea at first, and then it was like, oh, it doesn't have to be like knuckle dragging Red State rock, you know? Like,
Not get the metal riff starting point thing at all until I came up with my first riff, and then it was like, oh, this is fun.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, it's what you do with it. It's not what it. It's like trying to judge a movie whether you should watch it because of the plot line. You don't know if it's going to be a good movie or not. It's who's making it and what they're doing with it.
It's so interesting the way that you experiment with various levels of creativity. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Does it ever, so what I was going to ask before, keeping that in mind, does it ever get into, do you have the thought like if we continue to do this and keep branching out into different levels of our own creativity, which is phenomenal and wonderful and true artistry, how can we gather new fans? Because we talked about expanding that. Is there a balance there? Is there some kind of...
That's got nothing to do with the making of the record and writing the songs all that. Comes afterwards with like, how do we market this thing?
As a pointed discussion.
I mean, you know, make a record and then you sit around and go, what the hell?
Yeah, how are we going to
do
we gonna,
this?
Yeah.
With this is not... You know, our fans that are still our fans around the globe are they've been through all of the, this is not the first metal they've seen out of us.
Right. You know?
So they're used to it. But this is a special thing because it's all anything from Sabbath to Nick Cave to The Damned to The Pixies, anyone who used metal guitar to best effect in our minds.
Yeah.
You know, Pantera. You know, like the superior guitar production that even Marilyn Manson ripped off Pantera. I mean, that was, you know, that was, so Pete got one of those going, you know, and it was super rad to make this record. It was definitely like, okay, all the way. And even Zia, who really, that's just, what are you going to make a little boy rock record, you know? And at the end, you know, she had come in and played on a bunch of stuff faithfully,
yeah,
but not, not celebrating every second of the creation like we were, you know, we were celebrating constantly. It was
so in that sense, so is it good to have someone on board who's not as, no, who's a little bit
here nor there. We're so self-centered in our but it's like, even she came in at the end when we started mixing and she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I couldn't hear it. I can't believe I couldn't hear it. I'm so embarrassed. You know, this is rad.
Yeah.
But
I can't wait to hear it.
But it started out really, you know, I mean, I guess it was pretty acerbic at the beginning.
Yeah.
But, you know, you feel to her, what she added was warmth, you know?
Right. So
hell yeah. Whether it comes from somebody who's enthusiastically adding warmth or reactionarily adding warmth because I don't even like this, you know, fine. Then put something in there that, you know, shifts the perspective or the emotional angle or the lighting
right.
of this thing. Just make it whatever's missing. Thank you. Please do, you know, and that's why it's just sick to work with people who, for, you know, the four of us for years have been able to do this, and theoretically our success is based hugely on watching each other's ass and covering each other's shit. Watch your back.
And you've been at this for so long, do you get satisfaction? Is it interesting for you to come to a festival to see other newer bands and how they're interacting, and what's, do you learn things, do you not, like what's that vibe like when you've been doing it for so long?
I don't know about, I don't know about like watching new bands all that much.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of the new technology, you don't really know what people are actually doing.
Yeah.
Do you mean
EDM stuff and like hip?
Everybody's got an MPC, you know? It's a sampler. Okay. So it's like beats, whatever's on there.
Yeah.
You put whatever you want in it. And it's like, you could push a button, it could just go beep, or it could be the whole song.
Right.
You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that watching bands, it's hard to learn stuff the way we used to, where it's like, I would stare at a guitar player's hands, go, how is that sound happening with, you know, whatever he's doing,
right,
or she's doing, you know?
Is there a disproportional amount of those type of bands or artists out there doing that now in your mind?
No, I mean, it is,
because there aren't ones that are playing actual instruments.
Of course.
Well, if you go to Psych Fest or Levitation or one of those,
that's the real shit.
But it's, I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just saying I don't know how to get information from that.
Well, I just don't find myself as inspired by it. And in my mind, it's not the equipment that's making me less inspired. It's actually the music coming out of speakers is less inspired to me, or weird. But then I go see Shannon and the Clams, and I mean, they're sticking to it like a 15-year period of history, and they're staying right inside that genre, and they keep milking more and more creative dark corners that they've scraped the muck out of and found another diamond, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but they are guitars and shit, you know? So it's easy to be inspired for me.
It's purely subjective, because there are a lot of people that draw their own that draw inspiration from not playing instruments.
I'm super into synthesizers and things where I don't even know what I'm doing with them.
Right.
You know, and I don't know what other people are. You can't tell when somebody turns a knob what's actually happening a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, go watch the Chemical Brothers. There's no, they raise their arms in the air every once in a while, and they're like, they're excited about something. I don't know what they did.
There is almost a physiological or psychological disconnect when I want to see a band. I want to see something that I can actually see. They're like milking an instrument.
Cavemen.
For everything they have.
Cave people.
Yeah. But then when someone's just turning a knob, for me personally, and I know that some people do like this, there is a sound coming out of the speakers, but I do like that that visceral connection with a performer that's on stage yeah. that's actually doing something that I can see and relate to.
There's people that
not to say that it's wrong, that there's anything wrong.
No, of course not.
Yeah. No.
Go ahead.
There's nothing wrong with like hip hop and is just a lot of it is just a sampler or a drum machine and a vocal. And then that's can be fantastic.
Yeah.
And it can be mesmerizing on stage.
Like Mama Said Knock You Out.
And
I just reheard that recently and was like, oh my God, this is even better than I remember it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying a lot of the new music is really, I find that a lot of it sounds very much the same to me.
Feels the same.
And I think it's also a lot of like, there's so much of like, it used to be very difficult to get your hands on a vintage synthesizer.
Right.
And now it's like there's like knockoffs of every single synthesizer out there available for pretty damn cheap.
Yeah.
Or there's even a virtual version that's like $10. So everybody's got the same equipment and everybody's got great recording equipment and everybody knows how to use it as well as, picking the presets. And that's going to sound pretty damn good. Yeah, so it's like there's a lot of that. And I think it comes across in that things sound a little bit the same.
I find that millennial yacht rock moment that happened, like when right after that whole whoa and Arcade Fire and all that, what happened was yacht rock. And it was Tame Impala, and it was You Look Pretty Good on the Dance Floor. That band that came back huge in the yacht rock era after putting out a really serious guitar record. Really good band. But it seems like popular culture. Like I go play racquetball every morning just kind of to get up and wake up.
Yeah.
So I go down to this gym down the street. And I hear commercial music. I hear the most commercial of all possible musics, because it's a gym, right?
Right.
So it seems like there's a pop and then for, quote, hipper, artier, that's making it into those big, global playlists. Is still this kind of yacht rocky. It's very.
But this is a racquetball center, though, Courtney.
Pardon?
This is a racquetball place. This is a gym.
It's a gym with everything. It's got a pool. It's got weights. I mean, it's got trainers. Playing, it's got machines.
It's just background music at the gym.
No, it's pop music. It is absolutely.
But you're drawing parallels from playlists. The gym to like. People's taste globally.
Yeah. They play the whatever Makamba, from Africa, the African girl, super hip, hundreds of millions of views. It's all the music, and sometimes there'll be like a Kings of Leon track from 6 years ago or whatever. But it's just huge music. So I still am exposed to the biggest kind of And there's still this glut of this one sound, and it's in the most commercial, on the most highest, most listens. Because there'll be, Imagine Dragons in there. If Eminem puts out a new single, it'll all hear it at the gym.
Right.
That's this. I think it's this keyboard thing that he was just saying. Anyway, my point. Well, got to circle way back on that one.
I'm just letting you land the plane.
Yeah. I do it in my sleep. It could be that there's just. It might have been that era. There's a huge, huge amount of. Synth plugins and apps and things being produced.
It's just everything is accessible. It's like so easy to get things that sound great.
Yeah.
That's why the fucked up amplifiers and the weird old guitars just sound cool because they don't sound great.
Yeah,
there's a human imperfection that's built into it also.
Yeah.
Courtney, let me ask you before I got to let you guys go, but Let me ask you one more question about the movie reviews. You talked to, all right, I remember one, it was Tommy, and he said, this is why punk happened. And what did you mean by that?
Have you seen it?
Yeah, of course. But yeah, but I think
no, have you seen it recently as an adult?
No, because I saw it when I was like 12 when it first came out. Christ, it scared the fucking shit out of me.
Oh my God, frankly. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's very sad and harsh. Really is. And has
no,
cool,
I know. I think I get I got
everything
that
moments. But by the end of it, you're just going,
this is the dumbest movie.
You're
on
chuckling,
the planet.
Yeah. And it is such fruitification of art, just gone off the goofball deep end.
Yeah,
and just
you've watched it as an adult. Oh, clearly, I haven't.
Dear
I need to
God.
Go back to it.
Yeah,
or not.
Particularly yeah, the yeah, ending. Yeah. Particularly
just smoke
the
a bowl and just
ending.
Then like watch 15 minutes of it and then leave. Fast forward to Pinball Wizard and then just turn it off.
Probably.
I remember as a kid being fascinated
would.
By Eric Clapton walking down the aisle when that wedding's the church scene, and he was like just had that strat when Eric Clapton was cool. Anyway.
When was that?
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
Can't even mention his name anymore.
Eric Clapton was cool. Oh, no, he was in a movie. I'm sorry. He was in a band with Jack Bruce.
Right. Yeah, that was cool.
That was the closest he ever got.
Well, listen, thanks a lot. I really appreciate
you
guys sitting
Thank
down
you.
And enlightening me with your amazing opinions and everything on music. No, it's great. I would love to talk for another for a
every
couple hours.
Every single one of those opinions in. Will have changed in like 11 months, I'm pretty sure.
God, why doesn't that surprise me?
The world's just changing so fast. And
so when
we'll have had dinner by then.
Yeah. You'll have to eat. Everything changes when you're going to eat something.
Yeah. I won't be hangry. This will all change by 9 p.m. tonight. What?
This is you hangry?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I guess.
Sure.
I got super stoned.
That's the excuse he's going with?
I got super stoned right before we walked up here.
Oh,
so
nice.
I don't know. I'm not even that hungry anymore. I don't really know, man.
Well, thanks so much. To both of you.
Yeah,
really
thank you.
Super
yeah.
fascinating. I can't wait to see your set continued success. And I hope you get new Jeez. Fans coming in all the time. Yeah. You should, because like, you know,
they might be very different fans for each record, but that's fine too.
That's okay.
A couple will stick around.
Yeah.
A
couple, yeah.
Hopefully they're not ones that just wanted you to play synth.
A couple that are just too stoned to get off the sofa will be like, I guess this next
I like
record's
these guys.
Not bad.
Yeah, right. I like the metal riffs.
Yeah.
When's that coming out? Next year?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to
just give a title.
I'm just going to say yes.
Yes.
Just say
it's going to come out. It's next year. It's going to come out.
Yes, it will.
Yeah.
Yes,
no one's going to fact check my podcast anyway at this point.
It better come out by next year.
Anyway.
It will. We're going to
Thanks for being here, you guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Great to meet y'all. Okay, that was me talking to Courtney and Pete of the Dandy Warhols. And there at the end, it sort of revealed why Courtney was just kind of going off on tangents and rambling a little bit, although it was totally cohesive and coherent and interesting. But, you know, he'd got super stoned before the interview. I sort of wanted to say something, but, you know, but I just figured that's what he was like. I mean, I'm sure he's like that anyway, but it kind of explains a little bit of what was going on. He kind of copped to it at the end, but it still made it super interesting. And Pete was there for some comic relief and support. And I just had a really fun time during that interview. I just sort of just let Courtney ramble and talk. And it was really super interesting. You know, they've been around for so long. They have such a vast and amazing and diverse catalog, you know, for over 25 years. And one of the things that stood out for me was kind of their talking about struggles of expanding the fan base. And but, you know, they're pretty laissez-faire about it. Sort of, you know, they do what they do. You know, they I think it was Pete talked about, you know, you just put stuff out there and you do your best. And they're and Pete especially is always excited to do something that he said we haven't done. Pete came to the interview with a synthesizer of some sort that's already boxed and hadn't really, I guess he was just kind of learning to play it. He talked about that briefly in the interview, but they're always kind of moving in different directions and discovering new ways to express their creativity. And, you know, he kind of just wants to just try something, as he says, and look at what the outcome is. And,
you know, I talked to them about what it's like to be out there for so long and to how do they approach trying to reach new people. They said, look, we just want to be noticed and that we aren't done. So if you're a fan of the Dandy Warhols or if you're not familiar with them, those are all really positive words, and they're working on some new material now. They have a new single that just came out that they put together with Debbie Harry, and it's entitled I Will Never Stop Loving You, and it's abbreviated IWNSLY. You can find that all on the streaming platforms. They're going to be out on tour in October, a bunch of dates, I think mostly in California. One that stood out for me was at the Fillmore on October 14th and 15th with the Black Angels, which would be an amazing set. I just saw the Black Angels this weekend in Chicago. There'll also be at Levitation Festival, which is the Black Angels Festival, on October 28th in Austin. They'll also be at the Neptune Theater in Seattle as well for all my Seattle listeners for this Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival special series. I want to thank again Courtney Taylor and Pete Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols for being here on this special episode and for sitting down with me at Bumbershoot. I really had a great time with them. Up next is Canadian artist Debbie Friday. Debbie grew up in Canada and was born in Nigeria. She started out DJing, and this is her first time at Bumbershoot. Her debut album this year came out entitled Good Luck. I love the way that Debbie articulates her artistic vision and is extremely thoughtful. We had a really nice conversation. Her album, Good Luck, came out at the same time with a short film of the same name that was co-directed by Debbie as well. It's a love story about a woman and a masked love interest. Super high quality visuals and a little haunting and really, really compelling. You can visit Debbie's website for a link to that movie as well. She also has an astrology podcast. She's a very philosophical and spiritual person seeking truth and meaning. And that's kind of the astrology podcast gives her an outlet for that as well. Really love to hear her reflect on what it was like to go out and tour this new album and to hear what she's been through, where she's going, and kind of where she's at today. I really loved talking to Debbie, and I know you will too. I will be back after this interview to talk a little bit more about Debbie and to introduce the next artist, Evan Smith of The Dip. But first, here's Debbie Friday.
Hey, Debbie.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Thanks so much for being on Roadcase.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's nice and quiet here. I hardly even feel like I'm in a festival right now.
Yeah. We're kind of in this secluded
cavernous
spot.
We could barely find it. It's like all like a maze down here.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Yes.
And you're at Bumbershoot, even though you missed your flight.
Yeah.
But you're here.
I am. I made it.
Yeah. Have you played Bumbershoot before?
No, this is my first time, first year.
Oh, cool.
So, and I heard it's like the 50th anniversary.
It's the 50th anniversary of this. Okay. Yeah, they skipped a couple of years. Yeah, but they're back, and it's like, you know, it's a staple of Labor Day in Seattle, apparently. This is my first Bumbershoot too, but
oh, nice.
I had the organizers on the show, so I know a little bit about it.
Okay.
Very much of an effort to promote inclusivity here and also and in the arts as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you go walking around, there's a bunch of different arts groups that perform. It's really interesting, like offbeat stuff, people on stilts, hula hoop, like pro stuff, like
okay.
Incredible stuff.
I see,
really cool stuff and exciting times for you too. I mean, you have this debut album like just came out this year.
Yeah, it's so weird. It feels like it's been a lot longer than it actually has been. Yeah.
Yeah, time gets really expanded when there's amazing stuff going on.
For sure. A lot of stuff this year.
Yeah.
A lot of new things.
Yeah. Is that a good thing for you that it feels like it's been like really long?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I like this is my first, I'd say, like album cycle, like proper album cycle. And so just getting to see how everything works and, you know, the whole process of it and stuff. And I guess I'm kind of also like a cyclical person because I grew up in Montreal. So you have the seasons, right? And it's always the same every year, but you go through these processes every year. So I'm used to this almost like, you like expand, like you contract. Exactly.
Yeah. So I live in Chicago's.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see. Yeah. Nice.
The concept of seasons is not unfamiliar to me.
Yeah.
That's something that's kind of like rhythmic for you?
And yes. Yeah. Huh. It feels like that, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. How has it been, the reception? What was it like when you first released it? What did that feel like to put it out there for you?
When I first released the album, it was exhilarating but also scary, because I think like when you're trying to do something new than what you've always done, there's always a little bit of I want to say like apprehension behind it, because you're not sure if people will be able to like receive you in the same way. Because I think this album's really different from my prior work that I had put out,
right? You had a couple EPs.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially from my first EP, which is Bitch Punk. Right. And it's kind of like, for me, Good Luck was like an expansion of sorts, and it expanded on a lot of things that I wanted to explore in music. And I kind of started doing it with like the audio plays that I was making over the pandemic. But this
audio plays,
yeah, I made like a trilogy of audio plays. So it was like this story that I told.
Oh, audio play, like a play, like on stage, like a production.
Yes.
Like a theater, sort of, like a story.
Basically, yeah, like a story. Like, think of it like a movie, but audio only.
Okay, yeah. Now I get it. I was just like, audio play. There's so many different ways to use the word play anyway. So,
yeah. So like I had made like this trilogy over the pandemic, and it started with my thesis project called Linksick. And then I made Vow, and then I made V for Virtual. And it was like the same world, but just like different parts of the story. And I think like through making that, I started exploring all these different things and like the way that I produce music and my relationship to music. And then I feel like I was writing Good Luck at the same time. So I feel like that kind of fed into that process as well. Yeah. And I really just started expanding, is just the way that I would put it. Like, I felt like I could communicate different emotions and more of like a variety of things. And then I also felt less afraid to explore those things musically, especially when it comes to like the way I use my voice. Mm-hmm. And even over this past year of just having the album released and everything, it's like I can feel the difference. Like, I can hear the difference and I can feel the difference. And I've been working on music always, but now it's like so crazy the way things are coming out.
Like, feel the difference in terms of like how you're be able to say different things with your voice. And that's sort of, isn't that something that comes with just doing it a lot? Or was it just this being able to do it into an in an album format, that something kind of creatively came up with? And I could talk to me a little bit about that.
I would say it's like, it comes from being able to do it a lot, because I've been touring all year. So it's like, I've had that practice, almost like that boot camp, but also being able to get the feedback has been like really important. I feel really lucky that my album has been so well received. Like, it's so invaluable to like get the feedback that I've received all year, and just like kind of seeing like, okay, what is connecting with people, you know, like what are they responding to, what's resonating with them, and then in turn like what resonates with me. And it creates this feedback loop from like audience and artist.
Interesting. Have you been surprised by any of the reactions that you've gotten from your audience and from your fans?
I think the biggest surprise was how much people liked this first single, which is so hard to tell.
I just want to like reflect, as this is an audio podcast, how much your eyes lit up when you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah. like it was the first single that really surprised me.
Which one was that?
So Hard to Tell.
Oh, okay.
And it was, so when I was making the album, my manager was always like, this song, like, I love this song. And like everyone I showed it to just like loved it. Yeah. But it's really different for me. Like, it was, you know, it's such a more gentle song, more poppy. And I was also singing in
very much of like a vocal test or
exactly
whatever.
Like, and I was singing in this way I had never sung before. And so that surprised me, that that people liked that. It so much.
Oh.
Yeah, I really did.
Oh, because you were doing something new. You're like, oh, people aren't going to like this?
Yeah, or I was just kind of...
Isn't that funny how that works?
You're like, yeah, I know. I don't know what I thought. I was just like, oh, like, I don't know. Like, I was really skeptical about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but then it ended up being a banger. Yeah.
It's really great. The album is something I've not really heard the likes of, like, in a good way. Like, it's so creative and different.
Thank you.
And I love your form of expression and the ways the variety, the how you express yourself in so many different ways. You've also produced a film that came out with this album as well.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
It's fascinating. What does the so for those just briefly, it's like this haunting film about. I don't know. It's you're one character, then you turn into another, then you become a schoolgirl, then you go and you guys party, and then but you're haunted by these people in these masks, these crazy, like
my boyfriend.
Is it your what's his name?
Yeah.
ID.
Yeah.
Is that who it represents? Is it,
No, not necessarily. I just make that joke all the time because he's supposed to be like the boyfriend of Friday in the film.
Yeah.
But it's like he's more of like an idea, I would say, than anything else. But the film was also something that came about at the same time that I was writing the record and recording everything.
Right.
And I always knew I wanted to kind of make this short film. And the idea I had was basically just to pull from things in my own life. So everything that you saw, like, for example, when I became the schoolgirl, that's like pulled from the fact that for my high school, I went to an all-girls Catholic high school in Montreal. It's like a kind of like a famous high school called Villa Maria.
Okay.
And it's like, sits at the very top of this like large hill. It's literally like a fortress.
It's not where it was filmed. That looked like an American high school.
That was like we filmed in Toronto.
On, that was like a full-on suburban high school.
Yeah.
On the bleachers at the softball.
I know, it's too bad. I really wish we could have gotten like a location that was more similar to where I'd actually gone, but whatever, you do what you can. But so I just pulled from different aspects of my life, but then I wanted to tell a story that was personal, but also something that could be like translated into whatever, you know, the audience could connect with or like attach from their own lives, like things that were just like universal.
Oh, it's definitely, there's enough in there so that people can interpret all these different things in different ways. Cause I'm watching like, wait, what just happened? Like I did that like 15 times.
That's great.
It's good stuff. Yeah. It's good stuff. You're born in Nigeria?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
You speak French growing up?
Yes, because I grew up in Montreal.
Oh, how old were you when you came here?
So
came to the North
to Canada.
America.
Yeah.
Wherever.
Whatever. So I was like around 2. When we came. So I don't really remember Nigeria at all.
Yeah.
We grew up in Montreal, but my family did move around like a bunch, so I've kind of seen all of Canada really. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is your family artistic, musical?
You know what? Not really. Like, there's no one else in my family who's necessarily in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a sister who is, who does kind of like fashion PR and stuff. And I have another sister who's like artistic, but she's going into nursing. Uh-huh. It's just like my family is like very, practical, I want to say. Like, my parents, like, my mom's a nurse, you know, my dad is a realtor, he used to do computer science, my brother works in tech. Like, it's just like everyone has these like what I call like proper jobs,
right?
Yeah.
Are they giving you a hard time?
No. Yeah. Well, before, I think when I first started off, I was a DJ, right? And when I first did that, oh my God, it was like, what are you doing with your life?
Right.
Yeah. But now, no, they're like really supportive now.
Why? They came over for like economic opportunity or a job?
It's like really hard in Nigeria, especially if most of the population essentially is just like getting by. And if you don't come from money or like, you know, work in government or something, it's just, it's difficult. I think it's a lot easier now, but this is like pre like internet revolution.
Yeah.
So, they left, like my dad was actually the first one to leave Nigeria. And, he was the first in his family to leave.
He came with that. Was he married to your mom? Or
No, he left really early. He left Nigeria like in his, I think he was like 19.
He met your mom in Canada?
No, they met in Nigeria because, so what had happened is he left Nigeria, kind of traveled the
world.
More
smiling people, yeah. Indicating.
He kind of just like traveled the world, right. And then he eventually settled in Montreal, and then he was like, all right, time for me to go and find a wife. So he went back to Nigeria, and that's where he met my mom. Yeah.
He's lucky to meet it. Like, he just went back and happened to meet your mom. That's cool.
Yeah, but I think that was really common. Like, whenever people immigrated, if they immigrated before they got married, they would go back. Yeah, to go and find
okay, we can talk about
wife.
That for 20 minutes, but Ben will kill us.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so they were kind of parents that were like DJing, like what? And then now look at you now.
Yeah. Now I think they're very happy, but it's because they didn't have a frame of reference before.
Did you even care?
No, I've always been like very rebellious and kind of always did my own thing.
Yeah. Well, big shocker,
yeah.
Debbie.
Oh, yeah. So I was just like, you know what, whatever, like I'll figure it out. And thank goodness I did. So.
Yeah. 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 So you've been touring. Tell me a little bit about touring this album.
So I've been touring all year, and I've done like a bunch of like dedicated release show kind of tours. So I did North America, I did Europe, I went to Australia for the first time, which was like just a beautiful experience. Like I always talk, I think my favorite tour so far has been the Australia tour.
Yeah.
I was there for 2.5 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing. Like I didn't know that I was going to love it as much as I did, but I just fell in love with Melbourne in particular. Like I loved the city. I loved all the people I met there. And just like the experience itself was just so incredible, like life-changing.
Yeah.
And I want to go back really bad. And then this summer I've just been playing a lot of festivals across North America.
Yeah.
And then I'm going back to Europe in November.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For more touring.
Telling me. Yeah. Astrology.
Yeah.
We had to go there.
Yeah. Well, now this is be like, okay, 3-hour podcast. If I get started.
Yeah. What sign are you then?
I'm a Sag.
All right, what sign am I?
What sign are you?
Yeah.
I want to say, are you,
I mean, maybe
you're an air sign. Yeah, because you have a podcast. So either Aquarius, Gemini, or Libra.
God, my sister's a Gemini. Ugh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So annoying to me.
Really?
Sorry, Eve.
Does she have the gift of gab? Is she a good talker?
When she wants to be, yeah. But it's like the dual personality kind of thing. One day she's like this, and another day she's like that. But it's my sister.
The beauty
I'm
going to
be like
totally
critical of her.
Yeah.
I'm December 23rd.
Capricorn, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
That's not going to come out on this podcast. Get to know me a little bit better, like, you know. And it's attached to your website and stuff. So if you want to know more about Debbie Friday and like what she thinks about astrology, you have a podcast.
Yes, I do. I have a podcast and a Patreon. It's Good Friday Astrology.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like where I go to post all my, just like for my philosophical musings, because like I'm a very spiritual and philosophical person, and I'm interested in like a wide range of things. Like it's astrology plus like a whole bunch of other stuff. So other things I study, like Jungian psychology. Yeah. I study like a lot of myths and stuff, religious texts as well. Like I'm into really everything. And all of it is about pretty much just trying to find a sense of truth and meaning. And so I funnel that through into the Patreon and into the podcast. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jungian and more like interpretative kind of type of analysis is more kind of where I come on board. I think just basing it on birth. I don't know. It's like there's so much weird stuff about it out there.
Yeah.
So I like your angle on it.
Yeah.
I think like figure out where you are, who you are. And
exactly. Yeah. Which is the beauty of it. Because I kind of see astrology as more, it's not a personality test for me. It's more about like pattern recognition. And there's like a science to things. Like once you actually get into the real literature of it. And a lot of astrologers are, you'll see like in the history, like a lot of people who are into astrology are also simultaneously, they'll either be like analysts, psychologists, some might be really like spiritual leaders, others might just like, they're like philosophers really, and they're historians, and they have this like perspective on life that I think can be really helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm so impressed by just your overall creativity, and like you just feel like you're like a citizen of the world kind of person that's just, you know, kind of understands who you are and what impact that has on others.
I try.
Is that kind of accurate?
I try. I think so.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
And hopefully I'll see you out there. Yeah. When are you coming to Chicago?
You know what? In October.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm playing Sanctum Festival.
Oh.
And it's going to be at that hall.
Concord Music Hall?
No.
Thalia Hall?
I think so. Maybe. Yeah. That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool. That's a great venue.
Okay. Yeah, nice. I'm excited.
That's my favorite venue. Yeah. 5 minutes away from there. Well, cool. I look forward to seeing you. I hope I'm in town during that time so I can check out your show.
All right. See you there.
It'll be amazing. Yeah. Hopefully there won't be a bunch of weird, like, black masked people out there. I don't even know how to.
What?
Talking about your film.
Oh,
they're kind of scary, I'd have to say.
You think so?
Well, no. You know how people have like kind of those like weird things that freak them out.
Yeah, because it's subconscious image.
People in robes with their face kind of covered is like bizarre to me. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'll take a pass. I watched it. It's not like it's freaking me out. And I won't do it. I know it wasn't a horror film.
Yeah.
But it sort of had the earmarks of it in the beginning.
A little eerie.
It is. Yeah. It was amazing.
Thank you.
And good luck. And I love the album.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on Roadcase.
Yeah, for sure. Right,
cool. Have a good set today.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye.
Okay. That was Debbie Friday. Boy, for me, that was kind of the interview that just absolutely zipped by. 18 minutes of just really concise encapsulation of where Debbie's at. It's kind of like when she first started out saying how this year with her debut album, Good Luck, kind of felt like it was such a long period of time. Sort of when you're really, really busy, time seems to just slow down and expand and you feel like you've done so much in such a little amount of time. Would love to have her back on the show for a longer conversation. There's just so much to talk about how, she started out DJing and then went through kind of a personal and professional evolution through that. And as well, her debut album, which is just an amazing work. I absolutely love it. It's kind of a genre that I can't even really describe. I mean, it's rock and roll, haunting, hip-hop-ish, soul. Just, you have to listen to it to really understand it, and I really highly recommend that you do. Debbie talked about how she'd been touring all year and that that had been so useful for her to get feedback on her songs and also very encouraging for her, and that she was surprised and happy as to the positive reception that she got on tour, especially from the number one single off the album, So Hard to Tell, which is just a really spectacular song. She's on tour. You can find out more information about her tour dates at her website, and you can also follow her astrology podcast on the website as well. And she will be in Chicago for my Chicago family. She'll be in Chicago at the Sanctum Festival that's taking place at Thalia Hall over the weekend that precedes Halloween. So I believe that's the 27th and 28th of October. She's also going out to Europe in November shortly thereafter. Really excited for Debbie. Just a super compelling artist, and I look forward to talking with her again and bringing more of her in-depth story to you here on Roadcase. And I want to thank Debbie so much for sitting down with me at Bumbershoot and chatting with me for this special episode. Up next is Evan Smith of The Dip. The Dip is a local Seattle band. Evan is from Iowa originally, came to Seattle to study musical education at the University of Washington and continued on as a grad student there. The Dip has a third album out. Actually, this is also the third time that they've played Bumbershoot, but their latest album, their third album, is entitled Sticking With It. It's just a wonderful album. I really, really enjoy it. These guys started out together as music students at University of Washington playing house parties. They were then a 9-member band. It's now a 7-member band, but you know, they were playing house parties, being that cover band, and just rocking the house. And then began to write songs, and to hear Evan talk about it, it was like an organic progression going from playing house parties to writing songs and then touring around the North
West. Evan is a baritone sax player. That's the big sax that you all see and hopefully love. I really love the dip. Evan's a really super good dude, and we had a really nice conversation. Really psyched for the dip and to see what's coming up with them as well. They've had a really, really busy year touring their latest album. They're going to Florida now at the end of October, and they've also got a new album coming up next year. I'll be back on to talk about Evan and the Dip after this interview and to wind things down after on this special episode of Roadcase. But first, here's Evan Smith of the Dip. Evan, great to sit down with you, brother.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, yeah. It's been fun, man. We've been hanging out and, like, eating pizza and coming up to this little nook up here. This is like the ballet theater here.
It is the ballet theater. I've never seen the ballet here, much to my chagrin. I would love to, but...
Are you a ballet fan at all?
Yeah.
I lived like a block from Lincoln Center in New York City. And I don't think I've talked about the ballet on this podcast, but it's
happy to be the first time.
The amazing confluence of music and athletics, I'd have to say. I mean, apart from like all the videos that we can do and things like that, but the Dip, I love it, man. It's like you guys tell me about it. So you're a former music student here from University of Washington, and you're a Midwesterner. So we were talking about the mm-hmm, Cubs. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I'm from LA, so I don't really need to like have my foot in one of those camps. Everyone excuses me from that. But tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to this point where we're at now.
Well, the band started about 11, 12 years ago. It's kind of a boring origin story because we all were going to school together. Most of us in music school.
Is that boring? That's not boring.
And then, like, music school kids decide to start a band. Band continues.
Never happened before.
And here we are. But we were, most of us involved in the jazz program, which is a little bit more like forward leaning avant-garde here. And just want to have a project that we could, like, roll into a house party and, like, play some funk. And it was interesting at the time. At our peak, we grew to 9 members, and so, you know, people show up to like a house party and they're not expecting like a 9-person band there. It's like,
yeah, I mean, was there room for anybody to like actually?
Oh, we would stand on like windowsills, I remember, for
that
one of them.
Sounds like fun.
I think that one got busted, but
I don't remember. Was it more like was it jazzy then too? And kind of because it's really like a really nice sort of soul R&B fun. Well, yeah. Like you feel good when you listen to.
We started out just playing covers, as I think a lot of bands do. Oh, I remember like viscerally being in a basement playing Superstition.
Oh, nice.
Like, oh, okay. I kind of write down the
visceral memory. Like, yeah. You don't really remember it, but you kind of like.
No, I very distinctly. Maybe that's not the right word. I distinctly have this memory of like I'm in a basement. I'm playing Stevie Wonder. Yeah. Here we are. So kind of right down the middle and. Right. Just little by little, it's like, oh, let's write our own songs. And we would kind of go down to this basement room at the University Music Building late at night and when other people would be done rehearsing and take some beer and, you know, jam out and write some tunes. And it was kind of the most organic progression you could.
Is this still like 2010 time frame?
Yeah, like 2011.
When did you graduate?
2012. Oh, I don't even know. 20.
You don't even know. Yes,
the teens.
You do know.
The teens.
Don't ask me.
I'm the elder statesman here. I was in grad school while everybody else was in their undergrad. So the timing is a little bit more of a blur for me.
Did you do music undergrad?
Yeah.
Or a grad?
Yeah, yeah. Music
all the way through. Mm-hmm. Does that require you to take also general ed classes?
It does for undergraduate. I don't think I had to do anything in that vein in my graduate studies.
No, I meant undergrad, yeah.
Yeah, I was a music education major in undergrad, so I...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So you had something to fall back on.
Yeah, but I still,
still
I,
do.
You know, I still I teach a ton.
Yeah, you
do. I actually love it. I think, you know, for as long as I'm playing in the band or when the band is over, I'll still be teaching music lessons too. And I do that when, you know, thinking about being on the road, when I'm not on the road, come home and it's kind of like dual lifestyles, you know, traveling around and being in the van or flying and being in a different place every night. And then
you have a kid.
I don't have a kid.
Oh,
I don't have a kid.
But you have a wife.
I do have a wife.
Okay. Yeah.
And a cat, which is
kind of a child.
Fur baby.
Yeah. They're kind of assholes, though.
Can be.
Is your cat an asshole?
To other people. Nice to me. It's the best kind of cat.
Right, exactly. Who cares as long as they're nice to you?
Yeah.
You said you've been traveling around a bunch this summer. It's been a tough one. Challenging.
Yeah,
fun.
We've been flying a lot, which it's great on one hand. Like I am married and it's nice to be home, be with your partner.
I thought that was going the other way. No, actually, it's great to be away because
No. It's good to be home a little bit each week, but it can be a grind. Like, okay, every Thursday through Sunday, we're leaving again, and just not having that consistency or kind of that looming trip to the airport.
Are you generally hopping on a plane and going places?
Right now we are.
Is that sort of the vibe when you're a band in Washington State?
That definitely plays into it. It's just like we're not close to other stuff. Right. Earlier this summer, we did a two-week tour, mainly through the Midwest, but we actually left from Seattle, and we were talking, I think it was the first time definitely since COVID, where we actually left on a tour driving from Seattle. Everything else has been flying somewhere, even for the longer runs.
Oh, wait,
flying
because you
somewhere.
Played like dates out here?
We started in Montana. So if you want to consider that local.
Did you play, was it that Pine Lodge?
No, we played in.
Is that the right name of that place?
We played in Columbia Falls, I think it was. It was by Whitefish was our first one, and then went to Bozeman.
Yeah.
And then over from Bozeman, we went to Fargo. And so we had like a drive day from Bozeman to Fargo, and then we were out and about the Midwest. So so mostly it's flying and picking up a vehicle even for the longer runs, and it takes a lot of we have to pick our spots because we travel a 6 or 7 piece band, and so it's a lot of people to move and a lot of logistics. We've had people come and go for sure.
Yeah, and you're playing baritone sax.
I am.
That's the big one.
It's
right?
Big. Yeah, and I've played.
Does
it.
Does that break down to like pack?
No,
it? No. So
no,
like, it's like a massive case. That's like the biggest case of any instrument on stage.
It is.
Right?
I just bought a backup baritone for when we have to fly on like small commuter planes.
Oh, one you don't care as much about?
Exactly right. That's 100%. One I don't care as much about. So if it's just like a one-off fly out, it's like, okay, I can take the backup. If it gets dinged up, that's what it's for. My other one I'm more like emotionally attached to. I've had it since I was like 18.
The one you travel? The other one?
The one, I mean, I travel with the other one all the time too. The one I played today. I've had it for 20 years. I've had it for more than half my life. And so I'm.
Is it just is it a feel thing? Is it kind of an organic?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
it's
like, it doesn't, like from an outsider standpoint, like I'm not really in the wind instrument world as much.
I just know all the tendencies. I know the sound, how it's going to react.
What are tendencies? What's the definition of tendencies?
Well, I think a wind instrument, a pitch is one of the biggest things. They all have their differences. Notes that we play sharp and flat.
You've got to actually play a sharp note to get to the actual
natural like I have to bring
note.
This note up. I have to bring this other one down.
But isn't that like, is that not the definition of an instrument that's kind of fucked up?
Well, part of it's just baked into the, every instrument has
it's
their
kind of a person. You have to, it's like a human. Like, you have to either accept their flaws and work with them or just cast
absolutely.
Them to the curb.
But it's a giant instrument to travel with. And there have only been a couple times I've had to get in an argument to get it on the plane. Usually, you just win people over with kindness.
Yeah.
Be really polite.
Yeah, you're such a Midwesterner.
You got it. That's like we're all just trying to do our jobs and get home. But stresses me out.
Oh, hell yeah. So you're wanting to get it in the cabin?
I'll put it in the overhead, yeah.
That's got to be a task, though.
Does
that thing even lengthwise fit? Because those are like, the overheads are like
sometimes
a couple
doesn't.
Only like
sometimes
a couple
it
rows
doesn't.
Long.
It depends
right,
on the type of plane. I could tell you based on like every.
Oh, so you travel, you like look at
fly.
The details of the flight details and then book according to that. But they can swap the plane at the last minute on you.
They could.
And then you're like, then you just have to. Will you ever put it below? You can
sometimes
gate check it.
Yeah, it's always gate check. It's always gate
listen
check.
To us talking about that. But this is like the details of being a touring musician, though, man. I mean, and what I love about the dip is that you guys are like this. It's kind of like it's just super musical. Like it sounds. It's just very. I like putting it on. It's like it's fun. It makes me feel good. You guys are expert at what you do. you know, you're jazz musicians from an academic background, and while that might sound to some like,
I am not going to check this out.
No, it's really happy and fun, and I love it. And you, were you touring with Lake Street Dive at one point?
Yeah,
we had such a great combo that really comes to mind.
It was amazing. They're incredible musicians, yeah. Wonderfully kind people.
They seem like they're fun.
We got to do about a week with them last September, opening for them on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. We had just gone to Europe to do some of our own headline dates and then came back and got to connect with them. And it was great. The bass player, Bridget, grew up about an hour from me. So I remember playing together a little bit.
Where's Rachel from?
I don't know where Rachel's from. I think out east. That's about as much as I could say. Out east as another. Yeah, there's another. I'm giving away my Midwestern roots. I don't know. Out east somewhere.
Just out there somewhere, outside of the cornfield, on the edge of the cornfield.
Got it.
That's a weird accent for like Iowa, which is like I got pretty much of a nondescript accent, doesn't it?
This is it.
Isn't it kind of like,
this is it, what you're hearing.
It's Americana. That's like in the middle of the country, and you are in the middle accent-wise between both coasts, literally.
I don't know if Seattle has any accent either. It's all just kind of.
I've got a little bit of a Southern California one still, but only because I try it, because I don't care if I have it or not. I'm not correcting for it. So Lake Street Dive. So you guys were out there with them. That's a great combo. I love that. And speaking about traveling, the only other baritone sax player that I'm familiar with is the trombone shorty, and I don't know his name. What's his name?
I don't know either. There's a few of them out there.
He's always wearing the baseball jersey, not a jersey, baseball uniform, like a tie or some sports thing. He's great. What an incredibly rich and amazing sound. Do you have to blow more air into that thing?
Yes, but it's maybe not as different as just playing other saxophones as people would think. I play a lot of alto, and I play less tenor, but
I'm like, how are you getting like that like low level of incredible fat tones, you know?
Well, I mean, I would love to get like, there's bass saxophone, there's contrabass saxophone. I would love to just be able to live in that low end even more. But we were in Calgary like a month ago. We were at there was the Calgary Folk Festival, and I got on the elevator at the hotel. Like, all the musicians are at this hotel, and there were two other baritone sax players. And I was joking, it's kind of like the Spider-Man meme where we're all pointing at each other. It's like, what are the odds? Like, three Barry players just taking the elevator at the same
player.
Time.
We're getting into the inside lexicon now.
Yeah, that's the slang.
Yeah, yeah.
Barry.
Right. So when you see each other, you're kind of like, hey, anyway, how's it going?
No one else is going to want to hear this much about the baritone saxophone.
Try us.
I hope there's comments being like, this was the most riveting talk of low woodwinds you have ever gone down.
playing house parties and then going from that to how long did you sort of operate in that level with your bandmates before you came out with the debut album?
We self-recorded like a 5-song EP, which was maybe within the first couple of years of us playing, and then we put that out and did our first actual like venue show, which was at Barboza here in Seattle. Little like 200 cap room underneath a place called Numo's on Capitol Hill. Maybe, you know, we rallied all our friends, actually people that had gone to the house parties that knew us like that. Right. That was an incredible thing, because we started playing shows and people would actually come out, because they're like, oh, I remember from this party. Cool. Yeah, yeah. Oh, now we're all 21. We can go to the show. So it's really been the most like natural progression. It's release some music, play shows, release more music, play more shows. There's been not a single like breakout moment.
Right.
And then, you know, at some point we're like, okay, we gotta get out there. And so we booked our own like West Coast tour, went all the way down to, I think, LA. Yeah, we made it down to LA. Mm-hmm. A couple shows. The show I booked in Santa Cruz, literally nobody showed up. Zero people.
Nice. There was trivia
going on outside, I think. So we were playing inside, and
hopefully we're talking like at the beginning then.
I think this was maybe 2015 or so. Uh-huh. I just remember
it's always good to talk about the shows that no one showed up to, Evan.
There was a really cute dog And it was obvious that there hadn't been music there in a long time because the sound system started smoking, like a fuse was blown or something. I was like, oh. And I remember we just played a song twice because like no one was there.
You might as well just practice it.
Yeah. And then the bartender was like, are you guys almost done? Because trivia's wrapping up and we're going to close. Like, obviously, we can be done at any time.
Thanks for bringing up the saddest venue moment in the Dips history.
So there
about
some
this,
of those.
What about this European tour, though? Tell me about that. Yeah.
That was fun.
Were you headlining?
We were. We had gone over several years before, I think 2019, opening for Duran Jones, who's here today as well, and got to hear him sound check and saw him out at our
show. Shot me down on this interview.
Well, you know, we're here.
Okay.
We're here.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy.
But so I'm looking forward to catching up with him and hearing his set. It's a solo record. It's really, really incredible. Amazing songs.
Amazing stuff. Wow.
And then, last fall was our own headline show. So we did, mostly we were in the UK and did Amsterdam and Paris. And then we had a couple festival things in Spain, which was great fun.
So how do you... Oh, yeah, the festivals are one thing, but like single venues, how do you prevent a Santa Cruz from happening again when you go over there?
You don't, really. It's blind faith.
Yeah.
Our powers that be wouldn't let us do it if there weren't someone that was going to show up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you're working with like either booking agents or somebody over there that's kind of saying, yeah, we're going to promote this and it's going to happen. I mean, just,
We're definitely at a smaller level,
more of like a humorous sort of.
We're at a smaller level there than we are here, but it was fun. Yeah, people show up to the gigs. We drive ourselves, so driving around the UK is always an additional challenge.
Shit. Who's the right-hand side of the road driver?
We all are.
I mean, left-hand side. What am I saying? I can't even figure it out.
Left-hand side. Yeah. Left-hand side. Yeah.
Right-hand drive.
Yeah, we all take turns.
I can't do it.
So far, so good.
I can't. It's like, it's so weird to me. I sit in the back of those cabs.
High rights, wide lefts.
What do you call it?
Tight rights, wide lefts. No, wide tight lefts, wide rights. Yeah, that's the one.
Left is the right turn, left, and right
tight
is
lefts,
the left turns.
Tight lefts.
Yeah, I sit in the back of the cab. I'm in London and just like fascinated by how something so ingrained in our brains can be and just unraveled in front of you.
I remember the first time we had taken the Channel from Europe, and it was Mark, our bass player, was in the driver's seat. And we were just pulling off the train going into the UK, and it was just like, okay, here we go. But he did a great job.
Oh, the Channel going to UK.
Going to the UK. Yeah.
I hear it's harder if you have a left-hand drive car. It's harder to be in Europe because then you kind of like it's normal inside, but it's not normal outside. But when you're in a right-hand drive, then everything is different. So you bear in mind that difference when you're on the road.
I liked being on the left side, same as usual, and then driving the other direction. It's like, okay, only one of these things is different.
Yeah, that's true. Like, also, however, there is the point, many people will back me up on this, that you'll be on an open road and you'll start to drift over to the right hand side, which is dangerous. Sure.
I remember putting I had a water bottle like on the dash, and I was like, okay, if I line the cap of the water bottle up with the lines, that's where
I
need to
be. Jesus, are you just this anally obsessed with detail?
Oh, pretty much. Evan? Yeah, actually, yeah. If you ask my bandmates, they'd be like, "Yeah, he's particular."
Send Evan to the interview.
I'm gonna say particular.
Nice
would be the word.
Would that be that? That's your good self descriptor. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, we'll go with that. So, where are you guys at now? You have this sticking with it.
So and we're kind of at the end of the tour cycle for sticking with it. We're headed out to Virginia this week, Virginia and Tennessee. We've got a few shows in Florida at the end of October.
Right. This Chattanooga thing you're telling me about?
Yeah, we're going to Chattanooga. I've only driven through
Chattanooga.
It's really beautiful from what I recall. So looking forward to it. And then we've been doing a lot of recording.
Uh-huh.
In about 2 more weeks, we've got another session lined up here. Actually, we were just in LA for like 8 or 9 days doing a big bulk of the next record.
Mm-hmm.
So we have another week up here in Seattle, and that's going to be pretty much it. We'll still have a few like auxiliary things that we need to finish up, but then we're going to be looking forward to the new record coming out probably like May or June.
Yeah.
next year.
Another busy summer.
Yeah, the whole thing will kind of start up again. I say May or June. I actually have no idea when it'll come out. That's kind of beyond our control. Get vinyl printed and let the machine start cranking up again. Next year.
Next year at some point. Yeah. Do you have a title or anything?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. We've got like a Pinterest board and we've got some Slack threads going, but we haven't.
Yeah.
We haven't
You're on
pinned
the way.
It down.
You're on the way.
Yet. Yeah.
How was the set here?
It was great. Yeah. It was great. It was really special. I hadn't really thought of it. But it was special being back here because we've played this festival twice before and uh-huh. I've played, with other bands at times, and it's a cool atmosphere because we're right in the middle of the city and, walk around. There's the Space Needle and there's like this giant fountain in the middle. So it's very different than your kind of general, we're out in a giant field.
Yeah.
Somewhere 30 miles from anything
it's
else
fun
type
to be
of
downtown.
Festival.
It kind of reminds me of Lollapalooza and the way it's like right downtown and there's skyscrapers. And of course, the Space Needle is like super iconic. Mm-hmm. I was like looking at that. That thing never gets old.
And
yeah,
like,
it's really cool.
My neighbors came. And so some of my students that I teach.
Oh, this is what this guy does.
Yeah. Like, so it is special just like playing at home. And I like playing early in the day because then
you
just get to hang out and chill.
You and I are going to go check out the Thunder Pussy set right now.
I'm excited.
Let's do it.
All right.
Thanks, Evan, for being here.
Thanks
really
for having
appreciate
me.
You giving me the
baritone saxophone.
Baritone saxophone supreme. Thanks again for giving me the lowdown on the dip, man. I love it. I love it. Everyone go out and check them out.
Let's go check out some more music.
Okay. Thanks for being here. Cheers.
Okay, that was me chatting with Evan Smith of The Dip. Evan's just a really, really good dude to talk to. I mean, he's from Iowa, Midwesterner. He talked about trying to get his baritone sax on smaller planes and just, doing the Midwestern thing. Just says it never hurts to be nice. That's how you can get stuff done most of the time. And it works for him. Hard traveling with the baritone sax. Yeah, we were talking about it, but I don't know. This kind of geeky stuff really interests me too. That's why I do what I do. And, you got to get from one place to another with your instrument intact so that you can create magic on the other end at the show. They've toured Europe a couple of times, which I found amazing. Notably in 2019, they toured Europe with Duran Jones, a far cry from the Santa Cruz show that Evan talked about early on in the Dip's history when no one showed up. Once you're at the bottom, there's nowhere to go but up. I mean, I'm not saying anything critical about the Dip at that point. Who knows what the circumstances were that surrounds that, but wow, that's a tough one. But hey, they persevered, and they're better for it. I mean, and their overall story is amazing. I mean, from house parties to touring locally to playing their first show at Barboza, Seattle, well-known Seattle venue to, he said students knew us from house parties and now they're coming out and they are coming to our shows. I think that's wonderful. I love their music. Like I said, it's super feel good music. These are a bunch of music students and jazz students that are really doing the thing. And I really love it. This is they were touring their latest album, Sticking With It, their third album. And, he says that they're now recording new material and new albums coming up at some point in the next year. So heads up for that. Really enjoyed having Evan on the show. So thanks to him so much for being and sitting down with me at Bumbershoot Music Festival for this special episode. So that concludes part two of my Bumbershoot special episode of in-person interviews that I conducted at the Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival that took place in Seattle over Labor Day weekend, September 2nd and 3rd, in the shadow of the Seattle Space Needle at the Seattle Center. Just a wonderful festival. Like Evan said, it's really fun festival. He talked about specifically, it's not like a festival where you're out in the middle of nowhere, man. This is right downtown, just like I like it. I live downtown Chicago. Lollapalooza is right across the street in the shadow of skyscrapers and in Grant Park in Chicago. This is similar in that way, analogous, it's in downtown Seattle. Fun festival, great music, fun crowd, just an absolutely inclusive and diverse atmosphere and very supportive atmosphere of everybody that I really, really enjoy. There's one more episode of my Bumbershoot Music Festival series coming up later this week, so stay tuned for that one. I've got George Gakis of The Revivalist and Cassandra Lewis and the Irish band Modern Love. All three interviews are just wonderful, so stay tuned for that one. This part two is the penultimate episode of this season of Roadcase. Hence, part three will be the last episode of the season. Then we'll be taking a short couple-week break before we come out with a new season of absolutely amazing guests. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'm going to tell you I am super excited about it. So stay tuned for that. Thanks to everyone for being here for this special part two episode of my Bumbershoot Music Festival series of in-person interviews. I want to thank all the guests that were here for this show and sat down with me at Bumbershoot for this part two: Valerie June, Courtney Taylor, and Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols, Debbie Friday, and last but not least, Evan Smith of The Dip. I want to thank all of you for being here and for your continued support of Roadcase, and we'll see you on the next episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening, and I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod. And we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.